Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners, or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, everyone. For our subscribers, we really appreciate your support. Keep those likes, shares, and reviews coming. If you're a fan and you haven't clicked that support link on our Anchor FM profile, consider it. We're inching closer every single day to upgrading our gear and improving the sound and quality of future episodes. And we're still researching those live stream casts, and just look for that going forward.
We want to give a big thank you to our sponsor, the National Coast Guard Museum. Please go visit them and consider becoming a plank owner or donating in some way to help get the museum built so we can create a legacy that people can go see for our service and what we do. And again, visit them on the web at...
It's CoastGuardMuseum.org/out, and you guys will hear a few ads from through this episode. So we really appreciate everybody that I think the service and just all veterans and retirees really appreciate anyone that considers contributing to those guys. So thank you. If anybody's listening for the first time, I promise you picked a good one today. I have talked to our guest today for about an hour the other night, and I think we're in for a good one. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and introduce him. We've got Mr. Charles Tex McDonald. He joined the Coast Guard back in 1985. He actually joined the Army a couple years prior to that, served a little time in Beirut, came back, transferred to the Coast Guard, got to skip our boot camp because apparently Army's better, but He went to a two-week indoc. They taught him to swim, and first assignment was the Coast Guard cutter Yacona up in Alaska. If anybody's unfamiliar, those boats were originally designed by the Navy to pull aircraft carriers and then converted to more patrol use by the Coast Guard so they could handle the seas up in the Bering. In 1987, transferred down to Galveston, also Sabine Pass stations down there. They ran UTBs at the time. 1988, went to Houston, the readiness office, which was basically like your port security office back then. They ran all manner of port security and law enforcement, everything from fingerprint dock workers, doing patrols, doing inspections. They had a law enforcement detachment there at the time that would go out and do some of those more high-risk boardings. He was a boatswain third class when he got there. Went to Port Arthur, Texas, and that would have been his final unit, and then got out in 1991 to pursue a career as a law enforcement officer. So really excited to have him on board. I think you guys are in for a treat. And with that, I'll ask Bill to ask the question.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it today. So, sir, what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories? The floor is all yours.
All right, well, I appreciate that. And first off, thank you guys for your service. For me, you know, as with all of everybody, especially in the bosun mate rig, they have many stories. But for me, mine was one that where me as the rescuer actually had to be rescued. This was back in 1989, up in Montgomery County, just north of Houston, specifically the Splendora City area. They had the worst flooding in that area's history at the time. And
Charles, was it a hurricane, Charles, or was it just a like just a storm system?
I believe it was the aftermath of a hurricane that hit around El Paso, and I can't remember the details exactly, but I know there was a lot of rain, and the way it was just rotating in place and just dumping rain all in the same area.
Yeah. Recipe for disaster.
And you know, normally we handle the rivers, some lakes, the Gulf of Mexico, you know, because at the time I was stationed in Houston. Even though I was in the readiness office, I was still qualified coxswain, so I had to do that duty, which was what I loved the most. And we were actually wanting to go to Splendora, but since it was so far inland, we were ordered to stand down. But all the coxswains and boat crews had been recalled. We were standing in the rec room watching the news, and people were standing on overpasses. The sheriff's department and rescue boats up there were, you know, they were overwhelmed, and we knew that. And I'm always, it seemed like I was always at odds with stupid commands. And I decided I'm going. I'm taking a boat, and I'm going to Splendora. And my first buddy, John Allison, that's who the story's really about. He said, "Tex, if you go, and I'm going." Well, next thing you know, every boat crew that came in, except for the duty crew, has decided that we are all going to Splendora to help. Knowing that, you know, we run the risk of being court-martialed, but it was highly doubtful that they would court-martial the whole bunch of us. So basically,
strength in numbers.
So basically, yeah. So basically, we just stole a bunch of Coast Guard small boats and run up north to Splendora. And when we got there, you know, of course, the news was there. The sheriff's department, none of them, they were too manly to hug her neck, but they wanted to because they needed help. And I don't know that we would have let them, but anyway, we went out and we put these boats in the water, and I'm talking, I've ridden out hurricanes. You know, I don't know how it is now, but in the past, we would take our 41s out and actually ride the hurricanes out offshore.
Yeah, because they always say the safest place in a hurricane is offshore, right?
That's exactly right. And I rode out two or three of them, so that was no big deal. But this flood was new, you know, and it's I would have loved to have had the power of a 41 in that flood, but that wasn't. I mean, it's kind of hard to trailer a 41.
What kind of boats are you driving? Like, I mean, what outboard, just how much horsepower, that kind of thing?
Yeah, at the time we had 17-foot, Lord, I can't think of the name brand. They look like 57 Chevys with, I sent you a picture of one of them. Had headlights on the front, had two 150s on the back. They were really stout. They weren't the fastest thing in the world, but very stable, all aluminum. You know, we're not We weren't the old guard, but we had some pretty sturdy equipment. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'd have to cross the current. We put in at an overpass, and the water, of course, is running south. We had no idea how deep it was, but you figure that overpass is at least 13 foot 6 inches, you know, to accommodate 18 wheelers, so it's probably 16-18 feet, and so that's a lot of water.
Yeah.
And there's no way we could go straight across. We had to bow up into the current, almost directly in the current, and just power our way to keep steady and just let the current push us over to where we needed to be in the calmer water and get back in the neighborhoods and rescue people.
And were you guys, hey Charles, were you guys launching on anything specific when you put in at the overpass, or you just knew like that was the area that was most populated?
We were directed by the sheriff's department. People were calling in. They knew where to go. Each one of our boat crews either had a sheriff's deputy or some fireman or somebody that knew the area.
Right.
So we weren't just out there blindly looking. We knew where to go, but at the same time, we'd find stragglers.
Right.
And we had to be really careful, especially, you know, those boats can handle a lot, but as a coxswain, you got to know what the limit of the boat. You got to know the boat. You got to know your equipment and what it can do in every situation. So we did have to turn back some stragglers and tell them, look, we will come back. It's not going to put everybody else at risk by adding one more person. It's just, you know, if you don't know your equipment, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and hard calls to make, but calls that have to be made, right? We want to take you with us, but we can't. Yeah.
Well, what happened was we ended up getting real close to dark, to where it was really unsafe, and the search or the rescue attempt was going to be suspended until the next day. And the sheriff's department come up to me and said, hey, we got one old fella that is diabetic. He's having a problem. Is there any way possible one of y'all can go get him? And another coxswain and I, we decided we'd take that risk. I mean, that's what we do. There was somebody that really needed our help. It wasn't like he had a safe place to ride it out. He was, it was a medical emergency. So I said yes. Another coxswain immediately said he'd go with me. Normally you'd have an engineer or fireman go with you. But two coxswains went out. We got there and there was two people. They were standing at the edge of the water. We took them on board expecting, you know, no problem. It's a light load. We're going to fight the current, ease our way back over the overpass, and we will have been done for the day. And this is where it gets really interesting or really bad quick. You know, a good mission turns south in a split second. I told you I didn't know how deep that water was, but I can tell you it's just like something out of a movie, but there wasn't no green screen there. A mobile home rolled up from underneath the water, about halfway out of the water. This is a full-grown mobile home, and when it rolled, the edge of it hit my boat and flipped it upside down and rolled over on top of us. And I got tangled up in some line that we had in the bottom of the boat. Plus, if you know the design of the 17 footer, they're not really built to rewrite themselves. And I got caught up under the steering column in between the steering column and the boat, and I couldn't get out. Upside down with my, my life jacket on, so it's holding me under the boat, and I had time to realize that I was fixing to die.
Did you have an air pocket in there?
No, this is, I wasn't even in a position to look for an air pocket. I was still sitting upright.
Oh, you're right.
In the seat.
Oh.
But upside down, it was like when we did the helicopter where they dump you in the pool.
Yep.
Upside down, you've got to detach yourself in the dark. You have to know your exit point and get out. Well, this was similar to that, except there was no, I was stuck. And I felt the branches of the trees just dragging the bottom, or dragging really at the top of the boat since it was upside down. And I don't know if I grabbed a hold of one of them or it grabbed me, but something jerked me out of that seat and I popped to the surface. And I'm out in the middle of the woods now, just bouncing around like a pinball machine off of these trees. And I'm half drowned. It's not really all that cold because this was in April, but still I'm wet. I'm uncomfortable. I mean, when I hit a big tree, it don't feel good. But I finally managed to grab a hold of a tree. I have no idea where I'm at. I'm disoriented. I got my rescue whistle, and I started to blow it, and I started looking for my other coxswain. I believe his last name was Sandifer. And I'm looking for, the first thing I'm really concerned about is the civilians. I'm looking for them, and I don't see anything. And then dark sets in, and really can't see anything, just hanging on to this tree for dear life. And I've always considered myself a survivor. I'm just too mean to go down with, being dumped upside down in a boat. But I learned, I was out there long enough that I didn't expect to survive. I got so weak I couldn't blow the whistle. And now it's let me change to the other side of the story.
And hey, Charles, were you wearing a life jacket when you were in the water?
Yes, I had my Coast Guard PFD on.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that helped pin me under the boat.
Yeah, it was the life jacket.
Yeah, because it was trying to float me up, but it held me under the boat.
Gotcha.
But, now hypothermia is setting in. So even though it's not cold, the water is still sapping the heat from my body, and I'm starting to get weaker. And I can tell, because you know what to look for when you're out doing search and rescue, and you know the timeline, especially with the water temp and the wind, how long you may have to rescue somebody versus recover somebody. And I knew about the length of time I was going to have.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
But the second part of this story, before I get to the ending, everybody was waiting and watching when I was trying to make it back to the boat ramp or to the overpass when that house come up and smashed us. And unbeknownst to me, everybody else popped up almost immediately. I was the only one that didn't resurface. And they had another boat ready just in case, and they run out there and they picked up the three victims in the water and brought them back. So they were good. They had a bad experience, but they survived. And my buddy John Allison and I have been friends for over 35 years now. And we met on the Yukona. He's the one that nicknamed me Tex. At first I thought it was pretty strange because he's from Texas. And it took me a while to get used to that nickname, but everybody on the Yukona took to it. So they knew me as Tex instead of Butthole. John said he wanted to give me a nickname before somebody else did. And I went in, like you said, I came out of the Army. And to be honest with you, I had a chip on my shoulder. I didn't recognize the value of the Coast Guard. I didn't seek to go into the Coast Guard. I didn't have a choice. The Coast Guard accepted me, and it took me a little while to understand, hey, you know, this is a pretty good gig. The Coast Guard taught me, I mean, the Army taught me how to say yes, sir. Well, my mom and daddy taught me how to say yes, sir, no, sir. But the Army just reinforced that. And the Coast Guard taught me morality. They taught me how to use the supervision and the authority that the Coast Guard has. And they let me use my own common sense and encourage that, and John Allison was a big part of that. So we met there, then we moved to Galveston, you know, not at the same time. We're not a married couple. It just happened. You know, he took me under his wing and showed me the ropes and helped me to get out of that attitude that I had. You know, he helped me understand that, you know, I'm not a one-man gang. This is a team effort. And once I figured out that, hey, you know, the Coast Guard, it doesn't matter where you are, if you're on a ship, if you're at a land station, if you're search and rescue, you're a team, and you can't do anything by yourself. And once I learned that, life got a lot easier for me, and I learned my place. I learned what I wanted to do. And I wanted to be a bosun mate, and above all that, I wanted to be a coxswain. And the Coast Guard let me do that.
Hear, hear.
and that's how I found myself in the water.
Right. All these good choices led you to there.
Yeah. The Coast Guard did teach me how to swim, but they taught me the strokes. I never could swim. I barely passed the swimming test, and the only reason I passed is coming out of the Army, I was very physically fit, and I dog paddled for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever it was. I dog paddled the whole time. You know, when they made me jump off that highest platform, mm-hmm. and go around that Olympic-sized swimming pool four times and then tread water. Yeah, you know, everybody else was out dressed and going to lunch, and I'm still out there dog paddling. But I passed because it was a task that they gave me, and by God, I was going to do it. So now I'm out there in the water knowing I can't swim, and that's one of the things that made me a good coxswain. Because I knew I couldn't swim, and by God, my boat was coming back to the dock. So my crew trusted me everywhere I went. My crew trusted that I was going to bring them back to the dock. Anyway, I'm in the water, and they saw, everybody, all the rescue team saw this boat go down. They rescued the three victims in the water. And they knew John and I were real good friends. And everybody, they made a concerted effort. They found John. And they said, John, we need to talk to you. He said, what's up? They said, Charles is gone. He said, what do you mean? He says, he's drowned. He's dead. He's not. He's gone. He said, Tex is not dead. They said, no, John, we saw him go down. He didn't come up. And obviously I wasn't there for this story, but this story, the way I'm telling it, is corroborated by everybody that was there. And he jumped up and he said, Tex is the strongest man I know, and he is not dead. I'm going to get him. They told him that they were instructed not to go out because they first made the attempt when they rescued the first three to come get me and were ordered to stand down. And John went to his boat that he had brought up there. One of the officers, now remember, we left without permission. After we were on the news, guess who showed up but our commanding officer?
Of course.
So, yeah. John's boat did have a little problem. It was two engines. One of the steering cables broke on the port engine. And there wasn't none of us strong enough. And he grabbed the biggest civilian he could find and drug him over to the boat. But one of the officers was there and told him, says, what are you doing? John says, I'm going after Tex. He says, no, you're not. John says, yes, I am. He says, I'm ordering you to stand down. You are not going to put that boat in the water. And John told him, says, we got a problem here. He says, the problem is I have a gun and you don't. And the officer just backed up because I don't know if John would have shot him, but John was putting that boat in the water.
Well, the officer believed John was going to shoot him, so, yes.
He didn't want to risk it. So John put the boat in the water and had that big old fella, and I wish to God I knew who it was, because that man deserves something, because he literally grabbed a hold of that motor with both arms in order to steer it. He twisted that motor from side to side by physical means. I mean, he was the steering officer. John would tell him which way to turn it, and he would turn it. And they spent 2 or 3 hours out there looking for me. And John's got a set of lungs on him now, and he can yell. And he's out there yelling for me. And what he said, he says, I heard this little squeak like a squirrel. And he said, that's Tex. And he told him, says, let's go this way. And they just let the current push him. And sure enough, he said, I was hanging onto a tree and looked like a drowned rat. I couldn't even speak. I couldn't blow that whistle anymore. And this is where I remember. I barely remember him on the bow of that 17-footer reaching down there and telling me, "I got you, buddy." He came out and got me. As tough as I thought I was going to die right there hung up on that tree. And everybody thought I was dead, well, they would have been right. I would have been dead. But my friend, John Allison, came out to get me. We all defied orders to go rescue everybody else. He defied orders and threatened an officer to come rescue me. Now, we get back. I don't remember the trip back, but I do remember they're trying to get me warmed up. I'm not going to go into details. Y'all know how to warm up a hypothermic victim.
Yep.
But they're trying to get me warmed up, and some officer come in, and I thought it was a police officer, but it turned out it was one of our commanding officers. Made a comment about how they needed to get their butt out there and get them boats ready for in the morning, and John jumped up and was going to physically assault him, and everybody grabbed him, and I remember that. I don't remember anything else, but I remember him going ballistic. He was just out of his mind. It was his. He was mad. And, of course, I didn't care. I was getting a massage. But anyway, the rest of the story is you would think that there would be some type of investigation, court-martial, because I lost a Coast Guard boat. How many people can lose a Coast Guard patrol boat and not be reprimanded or even questioned about it?
Luckily, you had witnesses.
Say again?
I said, luckily, you had plenty of witnesses, it sounds like.
And I'd counter it too, Charles, by saying, how many guys lose a Coast Guard patrol boat because a trailer surfaced out of the deep and capsized?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that is an extenuating circumstance.
I believe it is.
But I think the reason nothing came of it as far as being punished, Article 15 or Captain's Mast, is because the media was there praising us. We saved 122 people that would have been left to their own devices. And so, yeah, we violated a direct order. An officer was threatened with physical harm. A patrol boat is somewhere still up in Montgomery County out in the woods. And, yeah, the newspaper praised us for showing up and rescuing 122 souls. So we made the Coast Guard look good. It made it look like we were sent in like the cavalry, when in fact we stole those boats and did it because it was the right thing to do.
Damn the consequences in that point, right? I mean, you just, like you said, it's the right thing to do. You gotta make that call sometimes.
Yeah, what a story.
Yes, sir. Sadly, and you know what? If you go back and read the regs of what it means to get a Coast Guard medal, John deserved it. He put his life at risk against all odds to come save me. But unfortunately, he wasn't recognized in that manner. All we got was a letter in our personnel folder saying, "Hey, this is what happened. We thank you for an excellent job of making the Coast Guard look good." But I looked into trying to get him recognized, and it has to be recognized within 3 years of the incident. So sadly, he didn't get that honor. He passed passed away August 4th of this past year, and he is buried in the National Cemetery there in, outside of Houston. So John deserves a good send-off, and this was a story that I wanted to tell in honor of my friend and brother, and I thank you for that opportunity.
Charles, we appreciate you telling that story, and if you're okay with it and you feel it's appropriate, I'd just like to ask for a minute of silence so we can all reflect on what John did for you and the example he set for all of us.
Yes, sir.
Fair winds following seas, John. We have the watch.
John, thank you.
We have the watch.
Thank you very much.
Charles, an amazing story. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing it. That was powerful in a whole lot of ways. And I'll probably be listening to it a few times to take home some lessons out of that.
Yeah, Charles, by far one of the most interesting stories I've ever heard, and one of the best told too. Thank you very much for your time. And
I know Charles that you've got a few law enforcement stories. We'd love to have you back on one day, maybe if you're willing to share one.
I would love to come back on if you are bored, because everybody in law enforcement, whether it's in the Coast Guard, Sheriff's Department, or whatever, they have the stories, and you only catch the dumb criminals, and those are the funny ones. So yes, I'd be honored.
Awesome, we'd appreciate it. Hey, and I also know that you and I talked. You got a couple projects in the works. I know you wrote a book, Charles at Afghanistan, right? Available on Amazon. And I think you told me the best way to kind of access it and access what you've been doing is it charlesmcdonald.com?
It's actually Charles McDonald Holt.
Okay.
HOLT.com, because the folks in my hometown here know me as my adopted name, Holt.
Okay.
But my military service was under my maiden name. But it was my birth name of McDonald.
Awesome. And anybody that's looking for Charles, charlesmcdonaldholt.com. You guys can find the link on our website. We'll link him everywhere that we're at. So I'm sure most of you guys are going to want to read a little bit more about Charles. And
yeah.
We'll make sure the info's out there. So please go check him out. Check out the book. Check out his new YouTube channel. And I'm sure he'd appreciate it. And I think you guys will. I think we found a good one.
Awesome. Guys, thank you again for your service. The biggest regret I have is the day I got out. I could have retired at 36, or I could have stayed in at, what is this, 2019? I could have made a 50-year career out of this just about.
Well, Charles, I think, I envy the sheriff's department you work for, that you did work for. I'm sure they got a good one. There's no doubt in my mind. And we thank you for your service, and we really thank you for being on the show. Can't wait to talk to you again in the future.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks again, Charles.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done. Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.